Morning, everybody. You're all very brave souls for coming in today and talking about sex with us all. I walked in yesterday after being out in the mountains all day, tired, you know, a little cranky, pretty hangry. I'd eaten like 3 Cliff Bars the whole day and climbed for 5.5 hours, so I wasn't at my best. Walk in the door, my partner's watching Netflix. I don't know anything about what's going on. I just literally walk in, dump my dirty, stinky, wet gear in the corner, and I look at the TV, and there's this swarthy gentleman and this lovely lady, and it's going back and forth, and it's some foreign film, so it's overdubbed, so it's got that awkward, like, their lips aren't matching their things, but he kind of gives her this, like, fully intense look, and he's like, "When I'm with you, all my worries disappear." And then, of course, the sexual tension goes from like 30 to 4 million, right? And I had this moment where I was thinking, isn't that like 90% of what we see on TV? Those moments, right? "Everything you do completes me." Wait, that's not the right line. What's the line about "you complete"? Oh, "you complete me." There's all these lines of these incredible romantic moments that just, like, everyone falls into bed after, and it's just wonderful. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I wonder to myself, should I have more of that in my life? No. Busted. That's awesome. Should we have more of that? Whether you're single and you're looking to date, maybe, is that what you're looking for? A lifetime of "when I'm with you, all my worries disappear." Or that, you know, the couple you've been together for however long, and, you know, I don't mean to tell your stories, but I get couples coming to me all the time. 2, 3, 4, 10 years into their relationship. And they're saying to me, "Vince, I think something's not right. Because we used to not be able to keep our hands off each other. And now, what do we do? How is it that this works?" Today I want to talk about the physicality of our sexuality. And just so you know, there's probably about 6 more messages that I wrote that are sitting on the editing floor of my office right now, because there's so much to talk about. But today I wanted to talk about 2 things, about our physicality that impacts our sexuality. And just to put this into context, I am pro-sex. Can I say that out loud at church? Are you allowed to? Whether you're partnered, whether you're solo, whatever the combination of those are, I am pro-sex. I'm pro-sexuality. I'm pro-orgasm. I'm pro all of it. Now, to say that, it creates complexities all over the place, and I understand that. There's probably no topic that is more complex than sexuality, because there's a physical component to sexuality. There's a relationship component to sexuality, or they can be. There's a psychological component, there's a social component, there's a spiritual component. Like, it just doesn't get much more complex than that, does it? But that doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about it. Friends Church exists to help you make the world a better place. And I think you can do it through sex. If you're partnered, great sex is great sex, right? You can share that with each other, that makes the world better. If you're a person who's fully integrated their sexuality into them, chances are you're a more loving person. You're more calm. We know actually how the brain works, and we know that these are actually true statements, again, en masse. So sexuality and in integrating our sexuality as a whole inside of ourselves ultimately has an impact on how we behave in this world. And that's what we're all about. Today, chances are we'll talk about something that may not fit you, something that may fit you. This many people, statistically, this complex of a subject, some of you I'm going to miss, and I apologize. Sometimes we're going to talk about things that statistically are pretty common, but they're not common for you. And that's okay. Part of what we're doing here is to see what resonates with us and see what doesn't. And all of we learn from all of that. If you feel a little uncomfortable at some point today, I'm doing my job. It's a spiritual gym. It's not where you go and do nothing, right? If you feel nothing, I haven't pushed hard enough. So what I'm going to try and do is push hard enough to grow, but not so hard that we just kind of turn out and be like, okay, this is crazy. I'm feeling really uncomfortable right now. So if you feel a little uncomfortable, just take a deep breath. Tune me out for a few minutes or something. I don't know. But ultimately what we want to do is we want to explore how our physicality impacts our sexuality, which impacts our spirituality, which impacts our lives. Okay? Ready? Why don't we all take a deep breath because you're all looking a little crazy. It's going to get awkward, folks. So let me go back to that question. We all see in everything that we watch on TV, we read, it's all this like romance and falling into bed with each other and this, that, and the next thing, right? It's lovely. And the question we probably ask, and again, whether you're partnered or solo, should I have more of that in my life? Is that what I need? And by way of exploring an answer, I want to tell you a story about a couple. I'm going to make them man and woman because that's where the story comes from, but fit whatever genders work for you. One day the guy's in his farm and he's working and he looks over to the orchard that's next door to him and he sees this lovely woman. She's got tan skin, dark flowing hair. Her eyes, just like with that dark skin, her eyes are just popping, and her smile is like, oh, man. And she's bent over working in the plants that she's working with, and his eyes go further down. And she has a nice low-cut shirt, not hiding a whole lot of what's going on, and he's liking it, folks. She looks up, his eyes and her eyes meet. It's that spark. Not the spiritual spark, but the sexual spark. Both of them are starting to feel their hearts speed up, the blood flow, right? It's feeling good. It's kind of this moment. Next day, she's working, conveniently working on the outskirts of the orchard, right? I don't know why I happen to be working here, but I happen to be able to see the young man with his shirt off lifting bales of hay into the whatever he's lifting it into, and his body is just like Adonis and rippling and sweaty and glistening. And she's liking it. Again, they have this moment, their eyes meet. They're both into it. We don't know how it starts, but notes start getting passed back and forth. He says, wow, I saw you the other day. You're beautiful. Your hair, your smile, your necklace. She writes back, thank you. I think you're pretty hot yourself. One thing leads to another. Pretty soon, they are flirting shamelessly with each other, sexually, crazy sexually. Here's the line. She says, come to my place tonight after dark. I'll be playing with myself while I'm waiting for you. Well then. He writes back, your scent last night is still on my skin from making love and it's driving me mad. This is a Bible story, folks. This is literally from the Bible. Bet you didn't see that coming, did you? And it just goes, you think, so I picked kind of some of the tamer quotes. It goes way better from there. If you're ever bored with me talking, open your Bible, read Song of Songs. It's good. It's about two people exploring premarital sex, masturbation, self-pleasure, oral sex. It's the gambit. And it's not PG. It is like hot and heavy. And if you just, whatever you need to do to create the right combination of genders to make this work, it's hot, folks. So why do I tell you this story? Why do I tell you this biblical story? Because ultimately, it comes back to the question I asked. When I'm with you, all my worries disappear. Let's make love, right? Should we have more of that in our lives? And when we look at this from the Bible, we're going, whoa, that's intense. That's hot. But here's the thing I want you to know about the physicality of this moment. Anyone ever want to admit that they went to raves at some point in their lives? Nice, I like it. Come on, loud and proud, arms up. Anyone ever see a pacifier, some kid with a pacifier in their mouth dancing away, right? I was going to say, any one of you did that, but don't put up your hands just yet. Ultimately, the pacifier was designed to engage with a certain drug set, we'll say. Is that a fair statement? Most of those little kids who had the soothers in their mouths, the people who are here who had the soothers in their mouths, were on a drug of some combination that was MDMA. What it does is it basically makes those moments more intense, more enjoyable, more pleasurable. And there's a study out there of psychoneuroendocrinologists. How's that for a good word today, huh? If you want to, like, what did you learn in church today? We learned about psychoneuroendocrinology. It's basically the study of the psychological impacts of the hormones in your brain. If we looked at the hormones that are going on in the brains of those club kids with a soother in their mouths, what we'd see is more pleasure, their clothes feel better, the skin feels better, what they taste feels better, everything feels better. And the same thing is going on in those club kids is what's going on when you're in your first year of a relationship. That couple that I told you the story about from the Bible, their brains are high on drugs. There is a drug party going on in there that is awesome and amazing. Can you throw up the list of noradrenaline, which makes us stay present and focused? You know, in that first year of a relationship, all you want to do is be around them, right? Your brain's actually designed to do this. Evolution has tried to make you so that you don't wander off. You meet someone, you create a connection, and suddenly you don't want to be apart from them. Dopamine, which involves the reward circuit of the brain that makes us feel good, being around them just spikes our bodies to feel good. Oxytocin, cuddle hormone, serotonin. Serotonin is when our serotonin drops, we become focused on things. This is that moment when you're with the person that you just met and they leave for their whatever and you're just pining after them. That's the serotonin drop in your brain. It wants you back together. Final one is testosterone. But why, the question is, why is it that evolution put our brains on drugs at that point in our lives? For one reason. To make babies. Evolution wants us to propagate our species. So evolution creates this great hormonal cocktail in our brain to try and get us together to make babies. For all you same-sex folks out there, you guys get all the good hormones and none of the babies. How awesome is that, huh? Ha ha, joke's on you, evolution. That first year, and here's the thing, it only lasts about a year. Give or take about 3 months. Evolution's like, if we can't get them together in a year, have a baby in a year, eh, screw it. That's all we got. So we look at this couple who's met in the orchard. They have this moment. Their brains start firing all these chemicals into their brain. Things are feeling awesome and sexy. And sex is just effortless. You can't keep your hands off each other. You make out for hours at a time. Like, try and do that 20 years later. Like, you just don't have the time. You're like, we seriously do not have the time to make out for 3 hours straight. That first year, what else would I do with my time? You can actually go on less sleep in that first year than at any other time in your life. It literally wants you to have sex and make a baby. No wonder the sex is awesome. No wonder all of our romance movies are based in that first year. When is the last time you saw a romance movie of a couple that's been together for like 60 years and it's all like hot and heavy? It's all first year stuff, right? So why do I want to tell you about the physicality of the hormones in your brain and how it impacts your sex drive in that first year? And here's why. Because it's not real life. It's awesome. It's super fun. It's not real life. You're hopped up on drugs. You're that club kid with the soother in your mouth dancing away, having a great time. 2 years later into your relationship, you're looking at going, wow, we used to not be able to keep our hands off each other. And now, let me tell you kind of what I want you to take away from this first section. First, let me start with this. Parents, here's the downside. Your kids have the same circuit you do. They're going to meet somebody, and their brains are going to be on drugs, and they're not going to pay attention to anything you say for that year. Nothing. You are that want, 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 want. Their brains are designed to ignore you and focus on this person. Everything in them is designed to do that. So what do? If you're a parent and you're freaking out, good. If you're trying to do sex ed at this point in their lives, you missed the boat. Just give up and go have a drink. I don't know. Like, don't waste your time. Have the conversation earlier. Much earlier. Because when this circuit kicks in, you don't exist. Your brain is designed to make sure, their brains are designed to make sure that you don't exist. The only thing that exists is that person. So here's what I want to suggest to you parents. And I'm not a parent, so just bear with me. Start early. And start in a very specific way. This isn't someday you're going to meet somebody and they're going to be a horrible person and don't get taken away by this drug haze chemical thing and blah, blah, blah. That's not the learning I want you to think about. I want you to think about this. When they're in that moment, they cannot make good decisions. They'll do the best they can, but logic's not there. They'll say yes to things that probably they should say no to. Chances are, the sex at that point in their life, if they've had done no other work, will be mediocre at best because their brain is not designed for pleasure at that point. It's designed to make a baby. So if you have kids, start teaching them about their pleasure earlier. This is my 10 cents, so you can ignore me. I'm not a parent, so just be like, he's not a parent. What does he know? If you start teaching your kids what's pleasurable before that moment, when they're in that moment, they'll know what they like. They'll know what's enjoyable. They'll know what makes sexuality fun for them and healthy for them. But it starts early. I want to go on one more limb. If you have biologically female children, I want to say this. Our culture right now has done a horrible job at teaching young women what's pleasurable. What's pleasurable for them. What works for their bodies. What the unique thing about their sexuality is. I can't encourage you enough, if you have young girls, teach them or help them explore what's sexually pleasurable for them. There's nothing that will protect them more throughout their life than knowing, actually, I don't really like that. I like that. Teach them. Give them what they need. Bring stuff into their life that will help them explore that part of their lives. Boys, too. Culturally, it's a little different. Anatomically, it's a little different. Works a little different that way. I'll let you study. If you disagree with me, please send me an email. I'd love to chat with you about it. But if we could do that, those moments when your kids are on that drug party, they'll go a whole lot better. Okay. If you're in that first year of a relationship, you know when you get a doctor's prescription and they're like, take these drugs, and it says, do not operate heavy machinery during... Think of that first year in the same way. do not operate heavy machinery in that first year. I had someone I love deeply, deeply come to me and say, hey, I met someone. Great, fantastic. How long have you been together? 9 months. We're thinking of getting married. And I was like, just can I throw a timeout in this one? Of course, they didn't listen to me because, again, I'm wah-wah-wah, and they're like, if you're in that first year, if you can hear my voice at all, if this is English at all to you, just delay the decision-making. Wait to after that first year. Just give it time. Have fun, do whatever, but wait to make major decisions until your brain's back online and not high. Now, for those of you who are single and engaging in this, I don't know what your sexual ethic is. Jeff talked a bit about that last week. If your sexual ethic is such that you can engage sexually with someone, and sexually in the broadest sense of that term, that first year is going to be awesome. Again, I'm not trying to say you need to have sex with someone in the first year. I don't know what you need. But if your ethics allow you to, there's no other time in your life that your body is going to want to engage sexually like that again. So if it fits for you, if it feels right for you, enjoy it. It's awesome. If that doesn't fit for you ethically, don't hear me say you need to. I'm just saying, if it does, this time is amazing because your body is primed for it like you've never been and you'll never be again. If you say, I'm going to wait for that, you know, 3 years and then I'm going to engage and then it's going to have that first year, it doesn't work that way. The first year starts when you meet and then it ends. Kind of a heavy one to think about, isn't it? Okay, if you're a couple who've been together longer than a year, there's a chance that your first year was that hot and heavy. And sometimes you look back, like I did at the beginning, and go, wow, that used to be really easy. And now it might be hard, now it might be tense, now it might be awkward. Hear my voice. There is no time, again, that your relationship can be like that first year. Maybe the doctor system or the endocrinologist will figure out a way to like pump you up full of drugs that you can experience that again, but chances are that's not going to happen. Don't look back to that first year as the utopian that it should always be. Understand that your sexuality at that time of your life is focused on a single thing. And it's awesome. But to compare the rest of your life back to that feeling, it can never be that again. Don't hear me say sex is only good then. Oh no, as you get to know somebody, sex can get better and better, folks. But it will never have that flavor of the first year. I don't know where this hits you. I don't know how this lands for you. But ultimately, again, I'm pro-sex. I want you to have healthy sexuality. I see people quite often, they introduce me to somebody, you know, I see you guys now and again, you introduce me to somebody, 8 months later you introduce me to somebody else, 11 months later you introduce me to someone else, 13 months later you introduce me to someone else. I have no judgment about that. But know what your brain's doing. It's following that drug haze. It's like, okay, it's starting to wane off. Let's go to something else. Woo, there we go. And it's starting to wane off. Okay, we're back up again. There's nothing wrong with that. But just know what physically is going on in your bodies. Is that an okay thing to say? I want you to look, if you're a married couple who've been around together for a long time, have great sex. Put effort into it. Work at it. Learn it about each other. Don't compare it back to that first year. If you're in that first year and it's working for you, enjoy the crap out of it because, man, your brain's wanting this. If you're solo, just know that that first year is going to be a lot of fun. If that fits for you, it can be a lot of fun. But don't chase it like that is the thing. Know that it has a lifespan. Okay, I want to give you guys a quick bit of homework. We're going to listen to a song that's probably horribly inappropriate, but Hey, it's talking about sex, whatever. Think back through your life. Think of those moments where you felt that drug haze. Some of us, if you're my age, you got to go back a little ways. It's okay. See it in the media. See it in the people you love. See it around you. And just start to put a note on it and say, okay, this is what's going on. Or even say this line. It's fun, but it's a one-year drug party and it isn't real life. Okay, you guys are hilarious. Your faces are all these kind of like awkward, like little grins. That's like, it's okay. Were you able to, don't put up your hand. Please don't put up your hand. But were you able to go back through life and see these moments? Maybe in your life, maybe in popular culture, maybe in your friends' lives. Can you see them? It changes it a little bit, doesn't it? It's like, oh, that's what's going on. That's why that felt that way. That's why that looks that way. Okay. I'm going to tell a story that is, I don't know where I originally heard this. It's happened to I don't know how many people, and so this is going to be kind of an amalgam of stories that I've all heard firsthand. It's a young boy, usually, in some combination of a parent, mother, father. The one I'm kind of remembering most clearly is mother. They're walking through the mall together. He's like maybe four. Is that like a four-year-old's about that tall? You know, like little. Not hitting puberty yet, small. And they walk by some version of Victoria's Secrets, La Senza, whatever. And the little boy looks up and sees like a life-size poster of some supermodel in some sexy little lingerie outfit. He's four. And he looks up at the thing, and he looks at his mom and says, "Mom, that picture makes my penis feel funny." There's a physicality to sexuality, right? It's not that they've hit puberty, society hasn't taught them what they need to do and not do, right? It's just this like little boy's physical reaction to something they see. And it turns them on. And he doesn't even know what it is, so he says, "It makes me feel funny." Yeah, like being turned on sometimes feels funny, doesn't it? I was reading a book that actually inspired this series. Can you throw up the book for me? Tell Me What You Want by Justin Lehmiller, a blogger, a PhD researcher. And basically he studies what turns us on. It's the biggest study in the history of sexuality in this context. What he's trying to get at is this, the science of sexual desire and how it can help you improve your sex life. What he's trying to get at is, what turns us on? No one's ever been able to study it at this scale before. 350 questions, 4,000 people responded to this survey in the States. It was all over the States, all people from 18 to, I think the oldest was 86. The only thing you have to be careful with this is, people opted in to take this survey. Because does anyone want to do a 350 question survey? Like, that is epically long. But what he's trying to find out is, what turns us on? And so of the subset of people that were willing to take the 350 question survey about sexuality, here's what he found out. Actually, we're going to talk a lot about what he found out. But here's the one thing he found out. Of that subset of the people, 97% of people said they think thoughts that turn them on physically. They think thoughts on a regular basis that turn them on physically. Therefore, to fantasize is to be human, right? To be sexually aroused by thoughts in our head is not uncommon. If I use the word normal, that word's tricky. Normal can have a statistical piece to it. A lot of people also do this. It can also have a moral implication. Meaning it's not amoral or immoral. Today I want to use normal in this context. It is common. This is not uncommon. So here's where we're going to get a little bit more awkward. Just in case you weren't all awkward enough, it's getting worse. The question he asked is, what turns us on? What thoughts in our brains turn us on? What fantasies turn us on? What do we think about that changes our bodies physically? Before you put it up, does anyone want to guess what the number one fantasy in all of the states is? Multi-person sex. Did I just talk about multi-person sex in church? This is the part where the lightning hits me, right? The number one fantasy people have that turn them on is having sex with more than one party. Now, whatever gender combination of multiple persons you need, more than one seems to be better. Now, here's the piece of this thing. I'm going to talk through what things turn us on. Please do not poke your neighbor. Just keep this, and let's keep this nice and focused on ourselves, right? No squeezing of hands, no of like, hey. What I want you to hear is, you're normal. Not that you're morally, it's not what I'm trying to get at morally. What I'm trying to say is, what you feel, the things that turn you on, are not uncommon. People who have multi-person fantasies tend to do them for a specific reason. Actually, here's an interesting thing. 5% of men who fantasize don't have this fantasy. 13% of women. This is ridiculously common. Of the people who have multiple person sex fantasies, the logistics and the arrangements and the scenarios of what that looks like is more complex than you can possibly think. So whatever you're thinking in your head is a multi-person sex scenario, yeah, it's that plus a bajillion other things. Primary reason people seem to like this fantasy, according to the author, is, can you throw that up for me? The appeal of threesomes has more to do with the fact that this activity creates a state of sensory overload than anything. It's really about amping up our arousal, about bringing in another body that we can look at, touch, experience in an overpowering way that allows us to get lost in sensation. If we weren't talking about this at church, if we weren't talking about you, makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? More common in men, this fantasy, than women, but not by much. How does it sit or feel to just sit with this idea of, okay, what is it that I fantasize about? It's a very private and personal thing, isn't it? And this is church. Are you allowed even to talk about this? Then again, I read you Song of Songs, man. The stuff that they talk about is, whew. Second most common thing that turns us on. Second most common of all things. BDSM sex. Sex that plays with sexuality, arousal, power, control, and maybe even a strength component. This is Christian Grey. What's the book's called, Christian Grey? 50 Shades of Grey. There we go. 50 Shades of Grey is all about this guy who's, you know, wounded, lovely, rich dude who likes to have sex with someone who he can control. And he meets this lovely young lady whose name I never remember. Anastasia, thank you. There we go. I saw at least one of the movies, so I should know all this stuff. But he meets Anastasia, and they end up having a bit of drama, actually a lot of drama, but they also have really hot sex. And what they're playing with is these ideas of control and power. But it's not in the sense that you might think. Just think about it this way. You're sitting in a movie theater, the movie's going on, the person next to you is talking to their friend, there's a kid behind you screaming, your popcorn just spilled all over your lap. What are you paying attention to that moment? Your brain's like this, I don't even know what to do, right? If your partner slapped your leg really hard in that moment, what would you be paying attention to? That moment. The author says, what happens when we play with sex and power and pain and all these things is it brings us into that moment really, really efficiently. Next time you're making out with your partner and you start to, like, you know, forget what you're doing, maybe it happens, I don't know. Tell them to slap you in the butt. Chances are you'll be right back into that moment, right? You see how malleable our brains are? We can take one circuit, our sexual circuit, we can take another circuit, and we can put them together. Even when you're playing with yourself, there's a way suddenly you're like, okay, now I'm doing my list, and okay, I got to send that email from work, and you know, you're all off the charts. Pain changes things. The third most common thing that people think about in order to turn themselves on is this: novelty, adventure, variety. For solo, this is engaging in different behaviors, in different places, with different things, different thoughts. This is erotica, porn. A lot of people use it. So if we look at ethical pornography, oftentimes what people are doing is they're using it to explore different parts of their sexuality. They're trying to go, what else turns me on? Here's an interesting stat from the book. If you're a woman who's in your 40s, or you're with a woman who's in her 40s, chances are they will need more sexual variety than at any other time in their life, bar none. For some reason, the hormones of a 40-year-old woman, chances are, they need more variety. So what worked for the last 20 years might need a little upgrade. Isn't it awkward to talk about this in church all together? I don't know about you guys, but it's like, I don't even know if I'm allowed to talk about this stuff, but it's more your guys' energy. You guys are all just like really quiet and like awkward and like, I'm kind of turned on, but I'm not turned on. I don't know what to do with that. Last four things. You throw them up there. Taboo and forbidden sex. Again, a way to get yourself in. Swinging, partner sharing, polyamory. Most common fantasy is not about celebrities. It's about your current partner and then some combinations thereof. Intimacy, romance, passion. Self-explanatory. Homoeroticism and gender bending. Just take a minute and look at that list. This is what turns us on. And here's the thing. Whatever one of those might resonate with you, if I had you look at your partner, which I don't want you to do, if I had you look to the other side of you on both sides, chances are the person sitting next to you probably has the same thing turned them on. It's unique to them, but you're normal. Your sexuality is normal. Your arousal circuits are normal. You are normal. Next thing, you can't choose what turns you on. That's a tough one, isn't it? The things that turn you on, the fantasies that turn you on, you can't just pick them. You know, actually, I want to be turned on by this romance thing with this flowers and then this like music. That's going to turn me on. It either will or it won't, but you can't choose it. Now, you can engage with different things. That's fine. You can be open to different things. But the things that are wired into you, you don't get to choose. You're normal. This is a physical thing. You don't get to choose what turns you on. It's lodged in your body. It's lodged in the physicality of you. Body is the wrong word. The physicality of you. If you have fantasies that sit outside of what's legal and consensual, here's what I want you to say. You can't choose those, but you also can't act on those. Suppressing them, every bit of research that the author did said suppressing them will just make it worse. It's like me saying, okay, everyone think of a goat. Picture in your head a goat, you know, a little. Now stop thinking about goats. What are you thinking about? We all know this. We know it intuitively, and yet with our sexuality, we're like, well, I'll just suppress that. That'll be good. It just goes to a bad place. So here's what I want you to do. If you have fantasies that sit outside of what is legal and consensual, and I'm not talking about consensual play where you guys make an agreement and then you play it out. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about consensuality. Go see a sex therapist. If you're open to talking to me, I'll send you to somebody. Chances are you're going to want to share this only with Google, and I understand that. Look for a registered sex therapist and go and talk to them. Just because something turns us on does not mean we need to act on it. But here's the thing. You can't choose what turns you on. In fact, the author has a questionnaire. He can ask you 15 questions that are things like your age, your gender, your sexual orientation. But more than that, it's your personality. Are you an open-minded person? Are you threat-sensitive? He can take that data, those 15 questions, and pretty much peg you what fantasies turn you on. Crazy, isn't it? What turns us on is a complex dance with our history and who we are and the traits that we have, and somehow our sexuality meshes in with that. Sometimes it creates ways of us to overcome deficits. Sometimes it allows us to overcome parts where we're just obsessing about another person. And in sexuality, sometimes it needs to be about you. And so you play with certain things in your head that allow that scenario to move to you. It's adaptive. It's beautiful. That's why it's so complex. If you're partnered, so if you have a partner you're regular with or somebody you're new, actually, how about this? I'm going to start with the people who are new. Dan Savage. Does anyone know Dan Savage, the sex columnist? Fantastic guy. He says, he's got this great line. Him and his partner have been together for, I don't know, like long 20-something years? Give or take. Don't quote me on that. But him and his partner have been together, and he says, in gay culture, first, he's gay. All you straight folks, there's something you guys don't get. Because when you meet somebody, you assume a whole bunch of stuff. If you're a gay man, and you've come out to your conservative Catholic mother and say, I like to have sex with men, there's something in you that kind of recalibrates. And he says, any two gay men, they meet, they, you know, they're at the bar, they have some drinks, they connect, they have a great time, they decide to come back together and have a sexual encounter. The first thing that they say is four words. What are you into? What turns you on? They start with a conversation that says, chances are we're different. And the unique makeup of you and the unique makeup of me, we're going to figure out how they're going to fit together. And it's going to be awesome. But it starts off with assuming your person you're with is not just like you. So if you're new to dating, you're just connecting with someone, try that on. What are you into? If you've been together for a while, chances are some of this stuff's a no-fly zone. Let's be honest. Talking to your, you know, partner you've been with for 10 years, that maybe you have something that turns you on that doesn't fit what they have that turns them on, it doesn't get much more complex than that. The author has an entire chapter of, first, should you share this? The next chapter is, how do you share this? But just know, if your partner starts to share bits and pieces with you, this isn't something that they've chosen. This isn't something that's against you. It's part of their physical makeup. And it's threatening, and it's scary, and it's weird. I read one story of a couple. They've been together for about a year. Every day she'd come home after work, and he'd say, hey, babe, lay down on the couch. Takes off her shoes, and he'd start rubbing her feet. He'd spend like half an hour rubbing her feet, and she's just like, oh, that feels so good. One day she found out that he was aroused by the smell of feet. Not uncommon. For whatever reason, that worked for him. She dumped him. She said, what you're doing is weird. She never got another foot rub again. Think about that. Every day for a year, she had an amazing foot rub that she loved. As soon as she had heard a story about it, that it was kind of arousing for him, suddenly it was this tainted thing. Instead of going, actually, I really enjoy a foot rub. He really enjoys rubbing my feet. That's the definition of a win-win, isn't it? You see how complex this subject is? Don't hear me say you need to tell your partner all that turns you on. Do not hear me say that. But we also know that sharing deep intimacies creates incredible intimacies for people. And so if that fits for you, if you start to do that, be open-minded with what your partner brings forward. Okay. Did you learn something new today? Don't put up your hand. I've been talking to this. I did a hospital visit. Sometimes I do the most inappropriate things. I was at a hospital visiting someone. And we're chatting away, and I'm like, hey, did you know? And, you know, they're like IV and like nose things, and we're talking about like the first year of sex. This is how it works. And yeah, sometimes. But every time I've talked to somebody about this over the last 6 months, they always look at me and go, and you can just see them, their kind of eyes roll up, and they're like, wow, I didn't know that. You mean that deep, dark secret of the thing that turns me on is actually normal? I've hid that for so long. I've beat myself up for so long. Couples struggling with what does sexuality look like after that drug haze is worn off? What do we do? How do we make this work? What I want you to take from this today is this. Your sexuality is normal. That first year, normal. It's not going to last for more than a year. Sorry, folks, it just doesn't work that way. But it's normal. If you're at the time when you can enjoy it, enjoy it. If you're past that time, look back and be like, remember that? That was awesome. And keep working at it. If you're just starting to get into this process of starting to be with somebody else, know that you're going to have that feeling. And that first year is going to be a drug haze. And that's awesome. Do not operate heavy machinery during that year. You will not make good decisions. Know that what arouses you is normal. If somehow I could do this where I could get you all to raise your hands and you'd all be honest, you'd look around the room and be like, wow, I thought I was this freak. And yet, I'm not alone. I tell you all this for this. With all of this in mind, with this new learning, I want you to have good sex. Solo sex, partner sex. Song of Songs, I want you writing that Bible story. I think that the original authors of that story put that in there to say, not only just to say like, okay, historically there was a couple and they had great sex. I think they're trying to play with us, the reader, and going, hey, how you doing? You guys having good sex? Let's amp it up. Let's get focused on this, right? Stan Takin, a researcher, he researches couples. One of the things he said is this. I think doctors should start handing out prescriptions that instead of saying, you know, like Tylenol 3, blah, 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 it should be like orgasm. Take four of these and then come see me next week if the problem's not gone away. You know that, you know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away? His line, orgasm a day keeps the doctor away. Feels awkward to say it, but there's something physical in us that orgasm, if that's something you can do, orgasm impacts how we are in this world. I swear to you, if you're that person who's taken great pains to integrate yourself, to honor what turns you on, to engage with it in whatever way is appropriate and appropriate for you in that time, you will walk around as a more loving person to the world. If you're coupled and you guys go from having mediocre crap sex now and again because you have to, because it's someone's birthday. Okay, did I go over the line there? Rewind a second. If you have crap sex, it goes out into your life. You're that kind of wounded, bitter, cranky person. If you can figure out a way to have incredible sexuality, the love from that spills from you into your partner, into the world around you. This isn't just Vince wants to talk about sex and get you aroused in church, although there is some joy in that. Ultimately, I want us to make the world better through sex. That's why I think the stories, the hot stories are in the Bible, just saying, this is something that matters. Go out and engage in this in whatever way is appropriate. So let me finish and say, whatever we do from this moment forward, whatever combination of partnering or non-partnering gender, whatever that combination is, may we go out and have better sex. And share the joy of that with our world. Amen? Okay, next week we're going to talk about expectations around sexuality as a whole. And if this didn't freak you out, that probably will. So come on out next week. Thanks, guys.